And welcome. You're listening to Art on the Air, WVLP 103.1 FM, our weekly program covering arts and arts events in Valparaiso and throughout Northwest Indiana. I'm Larry Breckner of New Perspectives Photography, right alongside with Esther Golden of The Nest in Michigan City. We are your hosts for Art on the Air. Hey, our 2019 underwriters for Art on the Air are Valparaiso University's Brower Museum and our landlord, Walt Breitinger. Hey, if you want to find out more about this leasing space in this great historic building here on 130 in Valparaiso, call them at 219-462-5821. That's 462-5821. We'd like to thank them both for their generous support. We always like to thank Greg Kovach, WVLP's station manager.
Thank you so much, Greg.
You know, getting...
We appreciate you.
Yes, getting Esther behind the board and getting us ready to fly. So thanks for all your help there. Hey, if you're interested in being a guest or sending us information about your arts-related event, exhibit, or just appear as an artist on our show, send us your information to artontheair@gmail.com. That's artontheair@gmail.com. And our program is rebroadcast on Monday at 5 p.m. Also, you can listen to the archive of the show at breck.com. That's BRECH.com/AOTA. That's breck.com/AOTA. And also, we'd like to remind you that WVLP depends on all you people out there to support us, and we're always looking for support. We have underwriters that at different levels, individuals, if you'd like to underwrite this show in particular, Art in the Air, Esther and I would be really happy about that.
Oh, incredibly happy.
Yeah, or, you know, you can support the station as a whole with our mission of bringing local radio to you. You can go to WVLP.org/support. That's WVLP/support.
We should also say Stars Over Valpo is coming April 14th, and that's another great way to support the radio station. Tickets are $20. You can contact... I have them at the Nest. Larry has some tickets.
I have some. And any host on the show, they have them. It's a great way to support the station in yet another way and have a great family night of entertainment. So
yes, family night is great.
It's
yes,
great.
All ages.
So anyway, WVLP.org/support. We don't want you to just be a listener. We want you to be a supporter or underwriter. And remember, like I always say, don't give till it hurts. Give till it feels good and join the WVLP family today. So now we're going to move on to our calendar for Porter County. We'll start with Valparaiso University. They're closing out their exhibit this weekend at the Brower Museum. They have Icons on Ammo Boxes by Sofia Altanova and Ascarando Clamenco. I love I got those okay. Line Force Burn Rubber, Sarah Klemp and Olivia Petrides. And finally, The Art of Lynn Olson. Those all close this weekend. They'll have a new exhibit coming up in about a week. Ellen Firm Gallery closes out an exhibit with Irene Brown. She's a docent that most of you might know at the Beverly Shores Depot. So that closes out at the end of March. She has these great caricatures of different things. The Village Gallery at Pines, Doris Meyer's exhibit, which opened on March 3rd, goes through the end of the month. It does Tree, Rocks, and Water, a collection of reflections. The Village Gallery is part of the Village Pines Circle in Pines Village in Valparaiso. The Chesterton Arts Center. Doonland School Corporation has been featured in there. The last chance probably to see the K through 8 exhibit running through March 30th. The opening reception for students in kindergarten. It's a great exhibit. I actually went to the opening on that one also. I saw the high school exhibit. It's wonderful, creative. Chesterton Arts Center has a whole range of classes. We can't even go into all of them now because they have so much going on. You can find them. They're on 4th Street in Chesterton. You can call their number, go online, Chesterton Arts Center, do a search, their website or Facebook page, and find out much. We'll probably talk more about that later with our guest. Art Barn, well, they're continuing their 2019 children's exhibit, and that's running through April 27th. Students that took art there anywhere from ages 5 through 18, you'll see that. You can find out information about that at artbarn@gmail.com. That's artbarnindiana@gmail.com. Also, their call for art for their 26th annual juried show, which will open May 18th and run through June 27th. They're looking for original painting, drawing, mixed media, and also three-dimensional work. Sorry, no photography, guys. Early submissions are due April 20th. You can also do it at late exhibition up to May 1st. You have to be finished and ready for gallery hanging. Also, they are doing open mic performances. The next one's will be in April and May. We'll have more details of that. Duo Sequenza is continuing with Deborah Sievert, flautist, and Paul Bowman, classical guitar. They have a whole series of concerts. They're almost too many to list. They're almost one or two every week all over Northwest Indiana. You can find out details by searching them on Facebook or Duo Sequenza. That's DuoSequenza.com. Finally, in Porter County, Art Z Fine Art and Antiques on South Calumet, a new gallery. They are going to have their Kids in Canvas. So an adult and a kid can go there on March 30th. It's $45 per adult and student, and you must have a child that attends with an adult. And you and your special child can create a large canvas painting together. They supply all supplies, snacks, refreshments. The instructor is Bridget Ndalski, one of the co-owners there. We've had her on the show before.
It was delightful, yes.
She was, yeah.
It was a fun show.
And again, that's March 30th. It runs in the afternoons from 1 to 3 p.m. There's a limit of 16 participants, and it's suitable for children like 7 to age 13. So that's all we have in Porter County. You have a lot in LaPorte County.
I know. I'm going to have to take a very deep breath because this is going to be a kind of a lengthy calendar. So in LaPorte County, Lubesnik Center for the Arts is exhibiting Nature Versus Everything through June 8th. It features nine contemporary artists with work in a new environmentally minded exhibit that explores the perilous battle between humanity and the natural world. In the Susan Block Gallery on the second floor is a large-scale installation. It starts with an animated video of a charcoal-drawn landscape with its inhabitants and extends into three colorful dimensions so that the viewer becomes part of the art. Then on April 6th from 10 a.m. to noon at the Michigan City Public Library, there will be a family zine making workshop. Families are invited to participate in creating zines featuring monsters, silly or scary. All materials are provided. Families have the option to have their zines displayed at the LCA, Lubesnik Center for the Arts, during the Material Culture exhibition. Admission is free. April 27th from 1 to 5 is the Zine and Small Press Fest 2019. It's the second year of it. The first year was so much fun. I am so looking forward to the second year. It's a very exciting. Oh. Have you all been?
Yep.
Yeah, I know. It's good.
Yeah, we went on the castles on and they showed us their zines and I was so impressed. You know, I hear them talk about it, but when you finally see them, they're really interesting pieces.
Yeah, they're great. And a whole room full of independent creators is an exciting thing. So 30 independent authors, publishers, artists, and activists will be present. Admission for that is free as well. Southern Shore Art Association, the March exhibit is Old, New, and Renewed, and the gallery is located at 724 Franklin Street. How many pieces do you have in that one,
I have six pieces, six and pieces? I will be gallery hosting today. As soon as the show is over, I'll say 12 to 5, but you know, going from Valpo to Michigan City, it'll probably be more like 12:30 or 12:45. But anyway, I'll be hosting this for this weekend.
So you can visit Larry and then cross the street and visit me.
Exactly. Spend your time in Michigan City.
They're open Friday, Saturday, and Sunday from 12 to 5 p.m. or visit their website, southernshoreartassociation.com, or their Facebook page, Southern Shore Art Association. Now, their April exhibit is Everyday Life in My World, and the opening reception is April 5th from 5 to 8 p.m.
First
Friday. Do you have
anything
you want to say about it?
Well, I haven't selected, but I have four pieces going in the show. I just don't know which ones yet.
And then we move on to the SFC Gallery. They're at 607 Franklin Street, and their exhibit is Watercolors by Pat Herman and Julia Holmas. And opening reception is April 5th from 5 to 8 p.m. Their telephone number, 219-877-4420. And they're also a framing gallery as well. And Christina does
was
a brilliant job.
Plus, she's
job
a wonderful artist herself.
She
her
is.
Birds are just remarkable.
It's true. In LaPorte, the Thaddeus C. Gallery is located in the downtown area, and their hours are 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. Tuesdays, Thursdays, Fridays, and Saturdays. And they can be reached at 219-326-8626. Or on the web, ThaddeusC.com. Blink Contemporary Art at 1709 Franklin Street in Michigan City is exhibiting new work, paintings, drawings, and sculptures by artists Rick Lang and Suzanne Cohen Lang. I had a little mini preview. It's really excellent. Rising Phoenix Gallery at 2803 South Franklin Street. Their current exhibit is called Threads of Life. It is a group exhibition of artists who work in the medium of fibers, fabrics, and textiles and is showing through the end of the month. Their next exhibit is Out of the Forest. Excuse me. Artists working in the medium of wood, April 5th through the 28th. The Nest at 803 Franklin Street is exhibiting the work of over 20 local artists in celebration of International Women's Day. We have both 2D and 3D work, plus a film of a live performance by Elise Kermani that's ongoing. And we will have an opening on April 7th in conjunction with our Movable Art Feast. Okay, we have some monthly groups. The Mindful Fiber Artists, they meet every third Sunday from 1 to 3 p.m. We have weekly Oil Painting Plus with Michelle Weiser, and that's on Sundays, every Sunday from 1 to 3 p.m. And the plus means if you would rather bring a watercolor, a drawing, or a mixed media piece to work on and benefit from Michelle's vast professional experience, please do so. And she will be guiding us, though, in with oil painting. So we've been doing several sessions of oil painting, and it's been so much fun. No painting experience is necessary. Michelle can guide someone who has no experience to the most accomplished artist. So please look for more details on the Nest Michigan City event page. The first and third Monday of each month is the Singing Sands Toastmasters. They meet April 1st and 15th this month. It's a new group they just chartered, so become a better communicator and leader with Toastmasters. March 30th, we have Keith Scott Blues, and that's at 7 p.m., and that's a free concert as well. So a lot of local people know Keith. Keith has met and jammed with blues legends Buddy Guy, Junior Wells, James Cotton, and Little Milton, to name just a few, and he toured with the Jimmy Dawkins Blues Band and traveled the world with them. So he will be in the Nest March 30th, 7 p.m. April 7th is the Movable Art Feast. That's the Sunday program I do with Blink Gallery, and the best our gallery will be showing the new work of Rick Lang and Suzanne Cohen Lang, and we will be featuring the opening of the International Women's exhibit. And I think that's it.
Oh my gosh, you just go to the Nest. It's like, you get your art fix right there. So
there's a lot going on, yes. And I apologize for my notes being so jumbled.
It keeps coming in. Well, if you want to send us notes in the middle of that, again, artintheair@gmail.com, and we'd be happy to get it on. Well, we'll move on to Lake County and the 119th Street Artists in Whiting. They're having their Under 18 Art Show. They'll be going April 9th, which is coming up soon, to the middle of May, and that's at the Cornerstone Art Gallery. That may be the second to last exhibit they have there. Unfortunately, the Cornerstone Gallery, which they've been in, which is part of the Centier Bank, it looks like they're going to reclaim the space that the gallery is in as part of the bank. So we're not sure what's going to happen with 119th Street Artists, and so they're looking. I know I've caught emails.
Do they have a couple good options?
Well, you know, they want to maybe partner with other groups, and so they actually contacted me about some of the groups that I'm involved with, see if we can get some of these small groups to partner
merge them
yeah. Or even just I call partner, you know, like, yeah. And maybe just work together and everything. But they're losing their gallery space, and what was nice about Cornerstone, it was open 6 days a week. Mm-hmm. So you know, it was a bank and everything. So but anyway, that's the sad news apart of that, but you can still support them. They'll have a reception for that Under 18 show on April 13th from 9:30 to noon. You can find out information about them, 119thstreetartists.org, and they're also on Facebook. Mm-hmm. Now, moving on to, well, South Shore Arts. They have started their spring classes. There may be a few openings left. They started March 25th, but you can check out that. But their exhibits still go through April 21st, and here's the ones that are in the main place in Munster. Bachman Gallery still has Haunts, and this was where guerrilla photographers are lured into Gary and other cities looking at the architectural ruins all there. It's a remarkable exhibit to show you the different, like the Methodist Church. The one I talked about before is Dennis Crane did an entire aerial thing using a drone of the teardown of Star Plaza and the Twin Towers. Whole exhibit of kind of the process of that. It's kind of sad to see it because that's been such a fixture in Northwest Indiana, but a remarkable exhibit. Excuse me, and that'll be going through April 21st. Atrium Gallery still has Jane Wachowiak, That'll be finishing up this weekend and everything. And so that will be in the Atrium Gallery. Some of their other remote galleries, Cafe Fresco through April 28th is Brianna Mihalovich, The Region and a Glimpse. At Artful Garden, also in Crown Point through April 27th, Kasia Sesanuski, Beyond the White Gardens. Studio 659, they are doing Worn Out, Worn In, Well Worn and Gently Used, Handled Lovingly and Exhausted. What an exhibit name anyway. And it's art that wears the idea on its sleeve. Has a show. It continues through April 12th. That one I do have two pieces in. It's studio659.org, or you can find them on Facebook at Studio659. They're in Whiting, Indiana. Miller Art Beach. They are still continuing with their exhibit, Polaroids by Julie Schwartz. And these are not the Polaroids like you think. She actually takes Polaroid photos and actually physically manipulates them, like folding them and doing different things. Great exhibit at the Marshall J. Gardner Art Center there on Lake Street in Gary. They'll be running through April 7th, and you can be there. They're open there Thursdays and Fridays, 12 to 6, Saturdays, 6 to 9, Sundays, 1 to 4. You find information at millerbeacharts.org, or you can find them on the Facebook. Area Artists Association continues with Artistic Narrative, and that goes through April 24th the Indiana Visitor Center at I-80-94 and Kennedy Avenue, that's exit 3, and Hammond, and it features almost 60 pieces from 15 member artists of the Area Artists Association. You can see them anytime, 8 a.m. to 5 p.m., so you can do that. I do have four pieces in that exhibit also. Southern Shore Arts Cooperative, commonly known as SLAC, continues with their Indifference and Ecstasy, two sides of the same coin at the Wild Rose Brewery. Dorothy Graydon has three pieces in that. That'll be going through April 20th. By the way, SLAC has multiple exhibits going throughout the area, so you can find them only on Facebook. It's Southern Lake Arts Cooperative. The nickname is SLAC. They're not slackers. They're just very busy artists. So, Best Exposure Art Gallery in Merrillville, a brand new gallery that's actually opened on the north side of the gallery, 53rd and Broadway in Merrillville. It's actually in an old a video store. They still have Megan Latta, A Vibrant Life in Color, and It's Contrast. And they're open usually daily, 5386 Broadway. And so you can see the work there. They're trying to keep it. That's Best, BESS Art Exposure Gallery. Finally, Promise You Art House in Highland. They are open weekends, but they also have a special viewing, which you can do that Jack Penning's Flower and Bombs, they call it. And you have a special viewing. You go in, you sign in, and they will let you view it privately. Sometimes he will be there. This will appear on weekends on March 23rd, 30th, and April 6th. So you can see that in the what they call the Gallery C. So that's what we have going in Lake County. Again, if you have information,
please send it.
Art on the Air, WVLP@gmail.com. And remember, if you want to support this program, it's do that at WVLP/support. Or you can view, remember, this show will be broadcast at Monday at 5 p.m. Or you can listen to our whole show archive at BRECH.com. That's BRECH.com/AOTA. Well, I'm happy to have this guest here today. I have to admit right up front, I know her fairly well. I've worked with her quite often, and we're going to talk about her background, both as a weaver, so she's going to weave many tales for us. Ha, 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 yeah. Yeah, had to throw a pun in there. So welcome, Chris Acton, to Art on the Air.
Thank you so much. I appreciate you guys having me. Thank you.
Oh, we're really happy to have you. So tell us a little about your background. First of all, we'll hit the nuts and bolts of it, kind of like where you were born, where you came, where you studied, and how you got here.
How much time do we have?
We have actually 40 minutes, so we have plenty of time.
Well, my background really kind of starts with kind of how I grew up in my family. My grandmother was a home ec teacher. And my mom taught elementary school, and so we were always kind of surrounded by arts and crafts, and making things was, you know, very valuable. That was the special present you got from someone, was something that was handmade. Also, a lot of music in the family. So growing up, it just became, it was kind of second nature.
So you said home ec goddess. So how did she, so expand on that. Like, what did she, sure. what kind of things did she do? It was like such an evocative way. 50s home ec.
Yeah, right. You know, and that went to meet her. Goddess. That kind of summed it up. she taught home ec. And grandma was one of those people who could just, if she could just like intuitively do things. I should clarify. I don't remember her being a cook. Not really. But everything else, like she made the, like she did a needlepoint that became the upholstery for the chairs. Mm. Like she, any kind of wall hangings or, I mean, cross stitch, tatting. I mean, she could just do it all. Any kind of wood stuff, she would construct things. I mean, she was really... really kind of wow. encompassed everything.
It's so yeah. great to grow up around that because then oh, you grow yeah. up and you just do it.
Well, you know? Because you just kind of presume everyone does. Right. It's one of those.
Right.
And my mom was she's a very talented seamstress. I should clarify. She doesn't really sew much anymore, but had mad skills growing up. She did all of the 4-H stuff and would submit. She talks about doing like a full suit where. She made the blouse. She made the jacket that was lined. She did the whole thing. So mom really inherited a lot of those kind of skills as well. And I think, you know, kudos to my folks who always encourage that too. As weird and crazy an idea you got in your head, they were like, sure, let's do that. So so that was always, it was a great kind of setting for what was to come. I do have a quick story about high school. I was mostly focused on music, honestly, kind of. I started playing piano in second grade and flute in fourth or fifth grade. And so I was big band geek. I was all okay. in, marching band. That was all encompassing. But my junior and senior year of high school, I took like painting and drawing one and then painting and drawing two, that kind of thing. And my senior year of high school, the teacher, Chris Davis, she had asked as we were kind of the year was wrapping up. She's like, well, you know, what are you going to do after high school? I said, well, I'm going to music and or I'm going to major in music. And she looks at me, she says, and art. And I said, oh, no, I'm going to major in music. She's like, and art. Now, ironically enough, I went to college and I majored in music. But I did do a double degree with interior design. So after college, I get out in the real world because I kept thinking, you know, I have to have a real job. Right. I need to be able to support myself somehow. So I did kind of a interior design related career in the corporate world for 12, 13 years. But during this time, like I have friends that are like, let's take a ceramics class. Let's take a dance class, whatever. I mean, I was always up for anything kind of creative and fun and, you know, whatever. I was happy to play along. So I end up in the corporate world, and my last job was with Discover, the credit card company, which is in the kind of northern suburbs there right. of Chicago.
I'm an original holder of a Discover card.
Are you?
Yeah.
Very nice.
Because I had a Sears card, which would...
Oh, sure.
And the Sears card, this is just off the cuff,
yeah.
was so difficult to get. You had to have people, not just a credit check, you had to have people that vouched for you, like your
wow.
ministers. It was a tough card to get.
Did you have to like give a DNA sample?
Do DNA back then. This was in the 70s. But then, of course, Sears, which owned Discover or founded Discover, mm-hmm. I got my Discover card then.
Yeah. Yeah. So. You know what? It was a great company. I was not thrilled with my job, but it was a great right. company. And after doing...
What did you do at Discover?
Well, the interior design background took me into, first of all, I worked for a couple of steelcase dealerships,
okay.
like the, you know, the cubicles.
Sure.
When you think
sure.
of the traditional cubicles, steelcase is one of the leaders in that and still to this day in office furniture. And so I worked for a dealership that sold steelcase furniture. And so I was the, like the design, they call us a designer, but you just kind of plopping in. It's like AutoCAD,
right.
light. You just kind of put everything. And then I would specify and... And so I did that for a number of years at different dealerships. And then one day I had the opportunity to jump ship and work for a company that had their own in-house designer that worked with a steelcase dealer, mm-hmm. which it was a company called Van Kampen. It was a mutual fund company, which doesn't exist anymore. I think some of the mutual funds are still around, but
right.
the company itself doesn't. But they had an in-house design person. So anything furniture related came to me. So if you... had a question about ergonomics. I knew just enough to speak to that. I knew that if you were a guy who was 6'5", we should adjust the height of your desk, some of those kind of things. I was the one who ordered the chairs or helped with the redo of the executive office or all of those kind of things. And turns out, at the time, Van Kampen was under Morgan Stanley, as was Discover. So Discover, being a much bigger company, had multiple designers, and one of those spots came open. So I moved from Van Kampen to Discover. So I worked there for a while, and I just remember one day thinking, I just don't love it. It just doesn't satisfy me. I would really rather just make stuff. And that's, you know, when you have
I
that,
do know.
Right? Because my job really was, I was an organizer, and I'm pretty good at that.
Yeah.
But it just wasn't satisfying. I'm like, I would rather be the person making the stuff. So,
you have to be organized to be a weaver. So.
Yeah, you do. You do. Being pretty left brain comes in handy for that. So I kind of poked around, and my parents are both educators. So one of the things that we do is, if you get bored or restless, you take a class, you know, learn a new skill.
Right.
Find something new and refreshing. So I kind of poked around, and I thought, you know, what would I like to do? And I had tried all kinds of fiber-related things at this point. I had tried knitting. I had tried crocheting. I hadn't tried felting yet, but I down the road did that. So I had tried some of the big ones, the really easily accessible ones. I'm like, well, here's a weaving class. I'm like, okay, I know nothing about weaving, nothing going into it. So I'm like, what the heck? You know, it's just 8 Wednesday nights in a row. I'm going to go for it. So I took a class at TLD Design Center, which is in Westmont, which kind of western suburbs. And it was love at first sight. It was, I remember somewhere in the middle of the project thinking, I could do this all day long. This is really my thing. It was just the perfect mix of color and pattern. And I don't mind setting up the loom. Some people are like, well, the weaving part's great, but setting up the loom is, you know, tedious. Right. And I don't mind that part. Yeah. It just all...
The whole thing
just,
is very meditative, I find.
Yeah. With,
like, the whole process.
Yeah. It really called to me. So about 3 years after my first class, I jumped the corporate ship and moved in with family. And my thought all along is, I'm like, I want to be to a place where I can, if I choose, I can weave all day long.
So I want to be a weaver.
Right? Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yes. So that's kind of how the background took me to get into being a weaver and starting Acting Creative as a company.
And Acting Creative LLC is your company that actually you market things. And that's available. You can find that on Facebook, I think.
Yep,
you have it
yep,
set
yep.
for Facebook?
Yeah, I'm on Facebook and Instagram. And then, of course, the website. Just in the last under a year, I got a grant to kind of buff up the website.
It's very usable, very clean.
Thank you.
Very beautiful.
I love
the blog.
See, yes, thank you. I will tell the boys at Sarah Solutions have they're in Michigan City.
Yes,
almost
they
across
are. Across
from
the
you.
Street.
Yes, love them. They were the ones who really did so much of that for me. So the website, the goal was really for that to become, you know, a true kind of online store, like one-stop shopping. If
sure.
you want to get a good feel for me and the company and the products, and it's all right there.
Very good.
Yeah.
Now you actually probably, I know, since I know Chris, I know this, but you
ask
have
away.
You have a couple different looms, I believe, right?
I do. Yes. Yeah. Well, I only have two looms.
Okay, two looms.
Is, if you ask any weaver who's done it for, you know, more than 5 years, to only have two looms is pretty rare. I'm part of the Duneland Weavers Guild, and we have, first of all, we have ladies in there. And I say ladies because it's almost all, I think there's one gentleman these days, but it's majority women. But some of them have been weaving almost longer than I've been alive. I mean, it's just decades and decades. And people have 6.
Wow.
8. You know, and some of them are smaller. Some of them are like little tapestry looms and that kind of stuff. But I have a floor loom, which is pretty standard. That's the one you think of when you think in your head when you get the visual of a loom. And it's a 36-inch, so I can make fabric that's 1 yard in width. That's kind of the max I can go. And then I have a table loom. I bet it's probably been, oh no, 8 years ago maybe, I did my first trunk show at Lifestyles in Valpo, just down the street here. And when I was talking to Renee about doing the trunk show, she said, hey, is there any way you could do a to do a demonstration. At the time, I only had the, you know, the big loom, and I'm like, that sucker's not going anywhere. But I was already part of the Weavers Guild, so I'm like, I can find someone I can borrow a loom from. So I borrowed a loom from Margaret Jones, and it's like, it looked like a Barbie doll loom. I bet the sucker was like 8 inches wide. I mean, it was so cute. So I borrow this loom for the trunk show, and I wove on it for the whole weekend, and I could not believe the response. So pretty much after I verified with Margaret that I couldn't in fact buy it from her, I went out the next day and bought my own, and I've had a loom that I travel with whenever I do any kind of event. Oh, so people fun. Can always see.
I've seen that. And we are listening to Chris Acton from Acton Creative, WVLP.org. If you're listening to us on the stream, and again, you're listening to Art on the Air. So now you have two looms, and I've seen the little loom.
Yeah.
And I've seen pictures of the big loom.
Yep.
So what type of things do you make on the loom?
Do you know what? As you kind of get into weaving, first of all, it took me about 3 years just to kind of get to a place where I was comfortable to do it by myself and not have a teacher to be like, oh, Tammy, can you fix whatever I've just done here? So it takes a while. And then it really took me another, I don't know, a couple of years after that to kind of figure out what I liked and didn't like. The beauty of weaving is that it's almost limitless. I mean, you can weave with almost any material. You can make, I mean, anything that is made of fabric. I mean, it's the sky's the limit. So it took me a while to kind of filter through what I liked and didn't like. And what I learned about myself is that I don't really enjoy the really, really fine threads. And when I say that, I'll give you an example. When I set up the loom, typically I use like a cotton. That's kind of my drug of choice. And I typically put 12 ends, 8 or 12 ends in an inch to give you an idea of how it's threaded through the loom. There are some weavers, especially in the Weavers Guild, that like to do wearables that really drape and they're very silky. They're putting like 36 ends in an inch. So it's like sewing thread. It's this really fine, very tiny, but it's going to drape beautifully. And for me, I was like, I'm going to pass. I would like a chunkier kind of yarn to work with. And I like it. I like my stuff to look a little more rustic. I like it to actually look like it's hand woven.
Right.
I find that there are times when I've seen weavers that do, you know, beautiful jackets and scarves and all kinds of just lovely things. But there is a point when it gets so fine. And if you're working on a computer generated loom, it really doesn't always look handmade. And I can appreciate that. But for me personally, I like that to look
the rawness.
A little, yeah, that's exactly right. Yeah, the rawness. Yeah, exactly. I like it to look a little more rustic.
Where can we find your products? Besides online, you're out doing exhibits occasionally fairs and things like that. And I don't know if you have any places in Northwest Indiana where say, hey, let me go.
Right. Do you know what? The Cheshire Art Fair, the Cheshire Art Center.
Right.
It's just, We'll talk about that later. I only work there. That's fine.
Do you have a booth at the art fair?
Do you know? Okay. Well, see, that's a whole another conversation. Yes. I did art fairs for a very long time, and what I learned a couple years back is that I really wasn't making much money at them. Right. So I decided for 2018 last year I wasn't going to do any event. I was going to be like, I'm going to take 12 months off and not do any events because it was this.
See if I miss it.
Right. No, that's exactly right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, and it was this combination of do I enjoy it and am I making money? And what I found in a lot of instances, it was a hard no for both of those.
Yes.
I was like, so I'm like, why?
It's
why
a hard day, isn't it? It's a hard weekend.
It's really exhausting. So I don't really do the art fair scene anymore. The events that I've gotten involved in, though, have kind of connected to various stores that I'm a part of. I'm currently in 3 stores in Michigan, 2 in Indiana, plus the art center, and then I have 1 in Wisconsin. So I try to do trunk shows with them.
Right.
And any kind of events that they have going on to kind of support them and also to showcase my work too. So,
Okay. Yeah. Now, is there a weaving or a fiber plank going in Chesterton or what did it?
Oh, there is.
Yeah.
Yes. On the corner of 4th and Broadway.
The other side from Chesterton Art Center.
Right, exactly. Almost kitty corner. It's right there, yes. It's the very old post office, which it was a antique mall for a while. But before that, some of the folks have lived in Cheshton for a long time know it as the old post office. It's going to be a weaving store, which is very exciting because a weaving store is not the same as a regular yarn store.
Right.
You know, we have great sheep's clothing here in Valpo is just fabulous. But a weaver needs different types of fiber in different formats because we're all about volume. We need things to come in cones and tubes, not in skeins and balls. And so it's three, I think it's called Three Moons Fiberworks.
Okay.
Rebecca Riley is the owner.
Riley Railhouse.
Riley Railhouse, right? Yes.
Kind of across the street
from their gig.
She's
connected, exactly. Yeah. It's all family, yep. She has talked about how she has multiple looms that she's going to have set up. She'll have some that will always be set up so you can walk in off the street and try a little weaving yourself, which is so cool. She's going to have an area if you want to come in and do some dyeing, because dyeing can be messy business.
Sure.
So if you don't want to do it at your house, she's going to have specific sinks for dyeing, all this kind of stuff.
So if you're dying to dye.
If you're dying to, exactly. Yeah. She'll have spinning wheels. I mean, it's really going to be heavy on kind of that side of the kind of fiber world.
Sure.
So instead of having knitting and crocheting pieces, she's going to have more kind of weaving, spinning, dyeing, all of that.
Excellent.
Area. And I'm sure she'll have stuff for the crocheters and knitters, of course. But it'll definitely fill a nice void when looking for weaving resources like this. We have, there's a great place kind of called Tabby Tree Weaver out of, I think it's technically Cicero, but it's kind of an outskirt of Indianapolis.
Right.
And then of course Chicago has a couple, TLD where I took lessons. She of course has looms and all kinds of weaving supplies and yarn and that kind of stuff. But there isn't much in between. So this could be really fantastic. I know she'll have stuff online too, and she'll have a lot of options for us.
And they'll mm-hmm. be close enough to the European market that people can kind of walk in there.
Totally. Yep.
That will be a really nice resource. And it will also, mm-hmm. that synergy that's happening in Chesterton with the kind of development of arts is great. I mean, you know, mm-hmm. so.
I love it.
Well, yeah. And so that's one of my questions about mm-hmm. your palettes. So do you have a palette that you love to work with, or do you change it yearly? Or, and also, you know, I read your blog about the greens.
Thanks.
Like, how did you wind up with like the apple green, like so much apple green? So do you buy your yarns? Like, how did you come? I mean, how did you have the surplus of apple green?
Yeah. See, I love this question. First of all, green is my favorite. So I tend to buy all shades of green whenever I'm close to. If I'm ordering yarn, I always go heavy on the greens. As far as a palette, I try to be flexible. I try to I do some stuff that's seasonal. Like especially when I was doing European market and art fair and art fairs and all that kind of stuff, when I would set up the travel loom, the table loom to take with me, if it was over 4th of July weekend, I'd put on red, white, and blue. You know, I would try to have it kind of make sense. It's kind of a longstanding joke, but the only color that I really, really don't care for is pink. Like the pastel baby pink kind of whatever. So people give me a hard time if there's ever pink in my stuff, because it's just not, I don't usually lean towards. I know there might be some. I brought in some samples for Esther and Larry today,
yes,
and there
no
might
pink,
be
no pink.
There
no.
might be a little.
We're gonna hold up the
there,
microphone so the audience can,
right,
can see it.
So you can see it over the radio. But as far as color palettes go, it's kind of however I'm inspired. I took this class in college. Because like I said, I was in interior design. That was my double major. And I took a class from William Itter. And he's one of the few instructors, professors, that I remember his name so many years later. Because, boy, he is tough. He was tough. But I took a kind of a drawing class from him. And then I was lucky enough to take two classes from him. The other one was a color class. And we did these exercises where you got a packet of paper that was all like different colors, a million different colors. And we had to cut the colors and place them next to each other. And basically, for instance, you take you have those like funny grays. Well, if you put it next to a blue, it looks very different than if you put it next to an orange.
Right.
So really what struck me and has stayed with me all these years later is that color is all about relationships. It's all about what's next to it. And no, even, I mean, weaving is the example of how color is affected by what is next to it.
That's why I enjoy both. I enjoy both so much for that reason.
Well, and it's great you say that because pointillism was always one of my favorites.
Yeah, my favorite.
And weaving, again, perfect example of that because I can have, you know, a series of greens together. And if you take them individually, this green is very brown and this one's very blue. But when you put them together, your eye does this crazy thing where it all kind of, I don't want to say flattens it out, but it mixes it visually. So, and that's been so much of the fun of weaving. And I think for me, just over the years, kind of building confidence so that I know that as I'm setting up the loom with whatever's in the warp, things don't have to be exact because it's going to intersect with the yarns that are in the shuttle, the weft yarns. Mm-hmm. And so there's always an opportunity to kind of get a different effect than what you intended. Part of it is being kind of flexible.
Right.
I talk about how weavers were not naturally spontaneous people. We're planners because you have to be.
Sure.
Because there's so many, you know, how many inches do you want this to end up
being? It's a lot of math.
It's a lot of math. Exactly. You don't have to love the math, but you have to be okay with the math for sure. But there is a certain, at least for me, I try to leave a little space for kind of the real magic to happen, to try a yarn that you wouldn't necessarily try and see how it interacts with everybody else, everyone that you've already kind of established. So it's so fun. The colors and the patterns, and even like with the patterns, my kind of music background, I think about rhythm a lot when I'm thinking about what does the fabric look like. If you see a standard bolt of fabric that I create, it's not the same from start to finish. I tend to just keep tweaking things as I go.
Sure.
So that no matter how the handbags are cut out, then each handbag is a little bit different from the one before it. There aren't two alike.
So I kind of want to go back to the past because
Aunt
Laura's craft store. Mm-hmm. So what was that like? Did you frequent it? Were you able to have carte blanche in it?
I know, right? I mean, it would be like a Willy Wonka kind of, yes.
I know.
Well, Aunt Laura was on my dad's side. And her family had a craft store. Now, let me give you a visual for Aunt Laura's house, first of all. Because I remember the craft store, they were in Michigan, so we didn't see them very often. But I remember the craft store kind of coming to visit. But even before that, Aunt Laura's house was so over the top. Like, talk about, like, the ultimate crafter. Like, anything with googly eyes and
me, I'm pom-poms and googly eyes.
Pom-poms were the best. Oh my gosh. Sparkly. I just remember now I was little, so it's all skewed a little bit, but I remember coming in and she just had like shelves of just stuff. Just, and things she had made. And of course, you know, this was back in the 70s, so every Kleenex box was covered with plastic canvas that she had, you know.
Needle-pointed.
Right, that's exactly right. And I remember kind of the difference between Aunt Laura and Grandma was that Aunt Laura really, really, really crafty. I mean, really, you know, glued a lot of things together. I think of Grandma as being like she... kind of honed her skills a little more in some of these different areas. But between the two of them, I had like the best of both worlds.
Wow.
Sounds like a carnival.
Oh, it totally. Oh, it was so much fun. Well, and even like I talked about growing up, I remember for Christmas one year because we'd make Christmas presents for each other and family and whatever. And we made these octopi. Is that multiple?
Octopi.
Yeah. Okay. We made octopi. And it was one of my favorite projects because you started with a styrofoam ball. And you probably remember this one.
Yes, I do.
Right? Yes.
Yes.
So
yes.
You cover the ball with a whole bunch of yarn and you tie it on the top and the bottom and then you braid the legs.
Oh my gosh.
And then the top. Yes. And the top, you trimmed the little top off so it had like a little fro kind of at the top, and then you glued on the eyeballs. Oh yeah. And that would have been right up Aunt Laura's alley. That would have been exactly, she'd have been all over that. But it was so much fun. And we'd go over to Aunt Laura's house and she'd be like, come on, I'm making something. Yeah, I mean, it was just encouraged you to kind of play and not take yourself too seriously. It didn't have to be exact. It didn't have to be, you know, whatever. It's all up to you.
Use your imagination.
That's exactly right. Yep. Use your imagination.
We're listening to Chris Acton on Art on the Air, WVLP 103.1 FM, which will be broadcast on Mondays at 5 p.m. And you can listen to our show archive at breck.com/AOTA. So we kind of got off on the details. What types of products do you make?
That'd be good to share, wouldn't it?
You sure would.
Those are kind of big ones. My products have kind of fallen into two categories, handbags and home goods. Handbags, it all started when my friend Laura was like, you should make a messenger bag. I had never made a bag at that point, because when you're weaving, you kind of start out with, you know, a scarf. My second project was like a small blanket, some of those kind of basic things that don't demand a lot of sewing. That was kind of key, because weaving, sewing, two very different skill sets. So my friend Laura was like, you always wear a crossbody. Why don't you make a messenger bag? I'm like, okay, I think I can figure that out. So I made a messenger bag for Laura. And what's to note is that I sewed it, which is the last time I ever sewed any. Sewing not for me. But
so who does your sewing?
Oh, I have a fabulous woman nearby, Joyce Coulter, who does all my sewing, and she is a whiz.
She's very good. She's looking at it right now.
Thank you. She is brilliant. Oh, actually. And then I have I have two. Boy, I see I'm adding to my my acting creative crew. Sherry Bone does some of the sewing for me as well. She's a pretty well known name over in Chesterton, just to, because she does some alterations. But pardon me. Sherry has like the big serious machine, so she does a great job of sewing the straps on for me. And Joyce is my girl who does kind of all the day in, day out stuff. But so then handbags is kind of how it started. I thought, well, this is cool. I love handbags. It becomes, you know, it's functional, but it's a piece of art as well. I love that mix. So when I first started, I did the mini bag, which is a 6x6 that I still make. And the messenger bag, which is the big kind of 11x14. And I had one originally that was kind of in the middle, but that one didn't really, I didn't need it. It was one of the, you discover that when you're making products.
You do.
That some things really work well and others not so much. So then as time went on, I added a clutch, which is like a 4x7 with a zipper, goes around your wrist. And then a wallet, which the wallet, of course, has become, it's kind of the bread and butter, because everyone needs a wallet. It's, you know, it's just the right size. You put your pass for the National Lakeshore, you know, you put your Panera card goes in there, keys. I mean, it'll fit, you know, fit whatever. So it becomes, that's kind of the workhorse. And then recently I added an eyeglass case, which is kind of a fun.
That's good.
It has a flex frame at the top. You can just kind of pop it open, slide your glasses in, and then it slams shut, so it's all protected.
Wow.
Yeah.
Is that one lined as, I mean, your linings are really beautiful. Do you choose
thank
them
you.
Or do your
I choose them. Yes, that's yeah, I do all the design nice. Decisions. Yeah, thank you. I appreciate that. A couple years ago then, I started doing home goods. And the way I got into this is kind of hysterical, cuz you know, you just never know. As a business owner, it's like bewildering. I'm always surprised by what things go and don't go, because I'm trying to think strategically, and at a certain point you just kind of go, okay, whatever, we're just going to go with the flow. So I'm at a show in Nashville. I have family in Nashville, Tennessee. I'm doing a show there, and this adorable couple comes up, and they talk to me for a nice long time. They're very curious, especially the girl. She's very curious about what I'm doing, and lots of really good questions. And they didn't buy anything, which is fine, but she came back about half an hour later, and she says, can I ask you a question? I'm like, of course you can. Yeah, open book, whatever. She says, do you ever make like a little fingertip towel? I'm like, I don't. I said, and here's why. Because you can get a very nice towel at Target for, you know, $10 or less.
Right.
I said, I would have to charge a lot for just a little towel. She's like, well, here's the thing. I don't really need or want any of the handbags, but I want something from you. So is there any chance you could just do a fingertip towel for me? And I was like, well, I said, okay, let me think about this. Now, on my table loom, I had a project that was wider than usual. So it was like I had like 10 inches on there.
Right.
And she's like, I actually like the fabric that's on the loom. I'm like, oh, well, that makes it easier. I'm like, you know, I could hem this up. I was going to be back in Nashville like a month later. I said, I tell you what, I'll hem these up, and I'll let you have first pick, and then I'll try to sell the rest, and we'll see how it goes. So as I was kind of going through this whole process, I'm like, I don't know what to charge. I tried to figure out. I'm like, I think it has to be over $30 for this. It's like a 10x22, like a little fingertip towel. So I settled on like $36, whatever. So she comes back and she's like, oh, this is great. I'll take this one. Awesome. And I think I had like three more in the mix. I'll be damned if I didn't sell those suckers like that day.
Wow.
And those crazy towels have sold so well since then. So I'm like, I guess I'm in the towel business. So just a couple years ago then at the Cheshire Art Fair, I had someone come up and she's like, these towels are great, but I need something bigger. So that's how the hand towel was born. So it's just, sometimes it just kind of happens like that. Yeah. I have pillows as part of the lineup for home goods as well. So it's just kind of organically certain items have been added just because of demand.
Fantastic. Yeah. Well, we're going to put on another hat. And I'm involved with this also, the Chesterton Arts Center. You're a major factor at the Chesterton Arts Center. I call it variably executive assistant or office manager.
Answer to whatever you call me.
Okay. Madam of the Mimeo. Of course, right. Mimeograph doesn't, but taking care of. So tell us about what you do for Chesterton. I know, but the right, audience doesn't.
On your website, it also says jack of all trades.
Jack of all trades. Yes. Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's pretty much. Well, on the, you shouldn't always put me in charge of things, but I'm in charge of listing the board of directors. And at the bottom, I have, you know, Wendy Marciniak, executive director, and I have Marie, who's Saturday person, and I have me, says everything else.
Everything else.
And that's really what it comes down to. At the heart of it, it's a small organization.
We're growing, though.
We are growing, which is fabulous. But we've got, you know, Wendy, our director, who's she's the lead girl. She's the front person. So she's out doing her thing, talking us up.
Connecting with the
sponsors,
community.
Exactly. All of that kind of stuff. And I'm the person who's in the office. So on any given week, you can find me there Monday through Thursday at least. Sometimes tack on another day as well. But my job kind of includes being a go-between from the teachers, setting up classes, I do all the press. So sending things out to papers.
Facebook.
Yeah, making sure we have all our events are on Facebook and Eventbrite. And while I don't do the website, I'm one of the people that sends things to our website guy. And then it's a lot of, you know, answering the phone and saying hi to people coming in the door and explaining what the exhibit is for the month and membership. We've really tried to focus on our membership lately. We had a membership drive last Saturday, which was wonderful. We had the group that came out was wonderful. They were very, very focused, very serious on getting involved and taking classes and volunteering and all of these different elements. So it's great. It'll be 7 years in June that I've been with the Art Center. Yeah. Part of the beauty of it is I live like a mile and a quarter from there. So it's this great, like, if it's nice, I'm walking. And it's part of the beauty of Chesterton as a small town, which I just adore. I just think it's such a great community, and to have everything within walking distance
Sure.
is wonderful. So when I started, it became just a day or two, and it's really kind of grown from there. And I think Wendy and I, we were friends before this, so we came into this kind of being like, all right, let's take it on. Let's see what we can do to really make it grow. It's a very old organization, but I'd like to think that we've tried to kind of bring some new energy.
I think both of you have a vision for it. And of course, I'm on the board and I see that. And I'm a newer member on the board. I've been there only a few years, but yeah, Wendy's out in the community. You're there to take care of everything else. Marie's on the weekend, and I mean, right there we have such a great staffing. And of course, recently we moved Wendy to full time.
Yeah, which is wonderful.
She's actually was working full time, but we actually are compensating her,
right? Absolutely,
which it should be. But the idea is that getting out in the community. She's involved with stuff. You're involved, and raising the profile. And like I tell people myself, is that really setting aside Valpo University, because that's a college-based one, it's the third largest art gallery in Northwest Indiana.
Yeah.
And
definitely.
So.
Yeah. Well, and Wendy was talking about she's got plans to bring in some bigger name artists to do some workshops and stuff, which I think is just going to be – it's just all good stuff. Just to bring awareness to the organization and to all the good things that we're doing. You know, we offer 8 kids classes each week through the entire school year. We'll have 4 art camps for kids during the summer. On any given week, we have 3, 4, 5, 6 adult classes going on through the evenings and weekends.
They're great, too. I've taken cartooning and
with
ceramics.
Being Cardi. Yes. With excellent. Did you take with Tom Monday Night Ceramics? Or was it before?
It was Tom. And was I couldn't finish it. I only was able to do one, and then I couldn't finish the rest of them.
Okay.
But the one was a lot of fun.
Yeah. Okay, good.
The one day. One day was a lot of fun.
And you have a life drawing class and everything.
Yeah. We got stained glass, which is a big one. That's
right.
Very popular.
Oh, yeah.
We have,
that's going to be my next one, I think.
Yeah. We have. We always have Friday morning watercolor with Dick Church. It's just wonderful. We have a couple new teachers these days, which is very exciting. We've got Robin Feely, who's doing a whimsical pastel. She does pastels on a velour board. Which is fascinating.
I saw that on Facebook.
It looks really different from any pastel piece that you've ever seen. And we have a great mosaic teacher. And we were just talking to her. I think she's going to offer a mosaic pendant class, which will be really, really cool. Sue Coombs is her name. And then we have new jewelry, Caroline Hatch, new jewelry instructor. So we're very excited to have some new folks just to add to our already kind of strong curriculum.
Right. And I think one of the things people don't know is if they join the Art Center, classes are quite a bit cheaper.
Oh, yeah. You get a $20 break at least.
Yes.
On each of the classes you take, which that kind of pays for itself pretty quickly.
Yes, it does. So wrapping up a little bit here, we got about 4 more minutes left in the thing.
Anything we did?
Well, it did.
I know. It does go by.
It flew by. That was great.
Anything that we didn't cover, anything we want to know about Chris Acton that our audience would like to hear about as a weaver, as a... the future, maybe your future direction.
What does the future look like? Do you know what? I've really started to focus on the website, custom work, and then boutiques. I do quite a bit of custom, and April is a great time for that just because everyone's kind of cleaning out their closets. But one of the things that I like to do is if Grandpa passes away, you have all his ties, how do you repurpose those? I can take those and turn those into fabric that then can be made into handbags or pillows or something for the family to make kind of new family heirlooms, which is just a really kind of special process. So I like to get involved in some of those kind of things. Also, in the end of April, I'll be up in Detroit. They have there's a group called the Fashion Revolution, and they're having the Fashion Revolution Week. And I'll be on a panel speaking about not the fashion industry so much, but just explaining how weaving works. And, you know, so much of our fabric is still woven, and people in the industry and how it all kind of connects. So I'm excited to be a part of that.
Wow. Yeah. And you think that this could eventually become your goal, maybe to make it full time?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yes.
Acton
yes.
Creative?
Right?
No. Oh, yeah.
Well, you know, my business card says Chris Acton, Chief Weaver. I'd like to have weaving minions one day. And I think, you know, weaving is just the coolest. And if at the very least, I just want to be like the biggest cheerleader possible for weaving, you know.
And you do custom work as well. Is that correct?
Yeah. Yep. Absolutely. Yep. Try to do a little of everything. So
you're really active. You're really acting.
There you go.
Well, I thank you so much for being here today. That's been that's an hour that flew really fast.
It went by so fast.
So
thanks, you guys. You've
been listening to Art on the Air. Chris Acton from Acton Creative. Art on the Air is heard every Friday at 11 a.m. and we broadcast on Monday at 5 p.m. Your hosts, Larry Breckner and Esther Golden. I thought you were going to throw your aloha in there, but we'd like to thank Greg Kovach. Thanks again to Greg Kovach, WVLP station manager, engineer on our show today. Hey, once again, if you're interested in being a guest or sending us information about your arts events, exhibit, or anything, artontheairwvlp@gmail.com. That's artontheairwvlp.com. And if you'd like to support us, it's wvlp.org/support. Listen to the show archive, breck.com/AOTA. Next week, we have Liz Werfel, a professor at Valpo University, along with 2 senior students with their senior projects, and they'll be discussing that. So we'll see you right here next week, 103.1 FM, Art on the Air.
Now here's the aloha.